Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and in just a couple of hours, right down the hallway from us here at the UW Marathon County Campus in Wausau at the Center for Civic Engagement Theater, it's the second debate between Democrat Tammy Baldwin and Republican Tommy Thompson, and the stakes are high, with a new Marquette University poll showing the race in a statistical dead heat, with Thompson pulling out into a narrow one-point lead. Now, that same poll also shows Wisconsin up for grabs in the presidential race, with President Barack Obama now clinging to his own narrow one-point lead over former Governor Mitt Romney. The poll does not reflect the impact of Tuesday's town hall presidential debate. Meanwhile, a hot congressional race in the 7th District will get even hotter this coming Monday as Wisconsin Public Radio joins the Wausau Daily Herald and both Wausau TV stations in hosting the first debate between incumbent Republican Sean Duffy and his challenger Democrat Pat Kreitlow. We've got an all-star roundtable to discuss politics today at the presidential, U.S. Senate, and congressional levels with Democrat Christine Bremer Moogley of Wausau, veteran Republican strategist Bob Williams of Stevens Point, and an independent Republican voice, Bill Krause, who has traveled here from Madison. We're going to be playing a few tapes today and opening up the phone lines to your questions and comments. That's 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742 if you've got opinions or questions on what is turning out to be a very interesting and very tight political season. Bob and Bill and Christine, thank you so much for being with us today. This should be fun.
Thanks, Glenn. This is fun.
So far, glad to be here.
What do you make of that new Marquette University poll, which turns Wisconsin from a blue state into a toss-up state for both the presidential race and the U.S. Senate race?
Well, I think that I always am interested in the Marquette polls, and sometimes I love them and sometimes I hate them. And this one, you know, I really don't like that much. But I also look at the timing of it. And the timing of it shows that this poll was pulled before the second debate and after the first one. And there's no question that the first debate was not something in President Obama's favor. So it doesn't surprise me at all that it's tightening.
Bill Krause?
Well, fundamentally, Glenn, this has always been a purple state, but I thought the purple this time would come with a runaway for Thompson and a runaway from Obama, so you'd mix those. So I'm very surprised that they're both as tight as they are.
And Bob Williams.
It shows that we are in play for a change, and I've enjoyed it, but I don't anymore because I cannot tolerate the quality of commercials I'm subject to on both sides.
Yeah, boy, I echo that.
Well, I'll tell you what. You've just led me into my first tape, and close your eyes, Bob. I'm about to play 2 minutes of campaign ads from both sides.
Torture.
And we'll come out on the other side and hear your comments.
I'm Tommy Thompson, and I approve this message.
She was ranked the most liberal member of Congress, the most liberal voting record of any Wisconsin lawmaker in 40 years. A super liberal. Tammy Baldwin is extreme. Baldwin didn't just support Obamacare. She wanted to go further.
I actually was for a government takeover of medicine.
A government takeover jeopardizing care, paid for by a huge tax increase. Tammy Baldwin, too extreme for Wisconsin.
I'm Tammy Baldwin, and I approve this message.
Tommy Thompson left Wisconsin for Washington. Boy, did he. Working for George Bush, Tommy cut a sweetheart deal with drug companies, making it illegal for Medicare to negotiate lower prescription drug prices. It cost taxpayers $156 billion. Then Tommy made millions working for a lobbying firm that represents drug companies.
We went to Washington to change Washington. Washington changed us.
Tommy Thompson, he's not for you anymore.
I'm Tommy Thompson, and I approve this message.
How extreme is Tammy Baldwin?
I actually was for a government takeover of medicine.
So extreme that even San Francisco liberal Nancy Pelosi attacked Baldwin's radical plan for disrupting Medicare for seniors. And to pay for her $2 trillion government takeover, Baldwin would raise taxes on middle-class families nearly $3,000 every year. Tammy Baldwin, too liberal for Pelosi, too extreme for Wisconsin.
So we went to Washington to change Washington. Washington changed us. Changed us.
Changed us. Tommy Thompson's changed, all right, telling supporters behind closed doors.
And who better than me to do away with Medicaid and Medicare?
You heard that right. Tommy says he's the best person to end Medicare, turning it into a costly voucher program, making millions for insurance companies. The same companies that paid him millions. Tommy Thompson for Senate?
And who better than me?
Better for who, Tommy? Ask Me People is responsible for the content of this ad.
Well, if you just tuned in, you haven't accidentally hit an AM radio station, a commercial radio station by mistake. That's a montage of ads for and against Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson and our panel, Christine Bremer-Moogley, Bill Krause, and Bob Williams. What do you folks make of the back and forth?
The thing that I'm incredulous about is the Thompson ad never mentions Thompson, and the Baldwin ad never mentions Baldwin. They're totally negative, both ads. There was an NPR story last week on somebody who monitored 1,500 ads in Colorado Springs. Five of them were positive. Any campaign I ran, I never mentioned the opponent's name in any advertisement. What happened?
These are different times, huh?
What happened?
You know, I think that when you look at these ads, they really almost cancel each other out. For a long time, Tommy didn't answer the Tammy ads, and that's when we saw her polls really go really high on the negative. And I think that message about Tommy selling out to lobbyists is something that really have people thinking about it. And Tammy has been just tenacious. I mean, she works so hard. She's raised a lot of money, much more money than Tommy raised, and his campaign has had trouble with finances, as we know. And so she's worked hard. She stayed on message. And when you think about the name recognition that Tommy Thompson had when we started this, 294% people, you know, in terms of name recognition, it's amazing. And Tammy just didn't have that. And she's fighting him, and it's tight. So the ads have some effect.
Bob Williams, what do you make of the ads? I know you don't like them, but what do you make of them?
Well, I worked on campaigns for people like Ann Walsh Bradley from this town, Supreme Court, Mel Laird, the congressman, John Wilcox on the Supreme Court. I would have expected to be fired by those candidates if I ever allowed campaigns to get on the radio like that. Both the candidates are much better than those advertisements tell them. And Bill's right. You talk about the other person. Tommy Thompson is a wonderful governor, a manager. She has been, for her constituency, a very fine congressman. It's just that that's not my constituency.
Who do you think is most vulnerable on the Medicare issue? Tammy Baldwin because of her support of the President's Affordable Care Act, or Tommy Thompson because of those statements that are being repeated over and over again about doing away with Medicaid and Medicare?
I think probably that she is in trouble because the American people as a whole did not want Obamacare and never cottoned to it. So if you're against Obamacare, then she is for it, then she is sloughed off and she becomes part of the anti-Obamacare.
Well, I have to answer that, as you can imagine. But, you know, I think that when you make a blanket statement that the American people were against Obamacare, that's just not true. I mean, they're against what people like to say Obamacare is, but not really what it's against. I mean, when people know what's in Obamacare, they're in favor of most of it. So I don't believe that that's true. I think when people are now realizing what's in Obamacare with regard to the protections for their family and their children, they like it. And so I think that on this ad, people understand this issue about Tommy Thompson selling out to the drug companies. And that's something that really people get. So I think that language of Tommy and his own words, it's kind of hard to dispute. So I think she's
but
not
Christine,
vulnerable. He is.
People are not opposed to drug companies. I am a polio patient. I'm a post-polio patient right now. The drug companies saved the lives of my families with sock. The drug companies did diphtheria. The drug companies did whooping cough. The drug companies are not the enemy of the average person.
No, but they're against politicians, you know, going out and trading on their public service and making $13 million in 7 years. They're certainly against that.
Yeah, maybe they're against the money the drug companies are making through advertising and through things that they were never allowed to do on the air before.
And I think they're against the fact that there's not been an ability for Medicare to negotiate the cost of drugs when the VA does, Medicaid does. Why didn't Medicare? Because of Tommy Thompson. And people understand that. And you might say that's not true, but that's what people understand. And then he walks out and makes this huge profit. It's too easy to put together.
Bob Williams, the polls do show that a lot of people do not like the President's Affordable Care Act, but the polls also show that they don't want to see Medicare turned into a voucher program, even an optional voucher program for people under 55. Bob and Bill, is that getting any traction at all? Bill, we'll start with you.
Well, what these ads are pitching to is the low information people, and so they're making both extreme statements, probably neither one of which would stand scrutiny. I remember reading recently about the Dewey campaign in 1948, and he said to the Republicans, our people are conservative, and what they want to conserve is the New Deal. He pitched to that group that Eisenhower picked up on, Nixon picked up on, and Tommy got pulled over to get out of the primary into positions that have no relationship to what he was as governor or what he is now.
He was facing three candidates
That's
who
right.
were further to the right from him.
Yeah.
And you know Tommy Thompson, he's going to go out there and try to win the debate and win the hearts
That's
and
right.
minds of the people he's talking to.
Yeah. And I think he knows it, that he trapped himself, and now he's in the box and he can't get out.
I just would like to add that it was really fascinating today. I was with Sister Simone, we're going to talk about her. But she said that one of the things we need now more than anything in our system is some true Republicans in the school that you are coming from, that we've lost those Republicans. We've lost the people that were more moderate. We've lost the ability to compromise. We've lost the old Tommy Thompson. And we've come up with these new candidates who pander to the Tea Party. And so we don't have any good debates anymore because we can't get anything done.
Well, I think we're talking to a couple of true Republicans,
right.
Bill Krause from Madison and Bob Williams from Stevens Point. And we're certainly talking to a true Democrat, Christine Bremer Moogley of Wausau. We're talking about the Tommy Thompson, Tammy Baldwin race right before the two of them meet in a debate right here in the just adjacent to the room that we're broadcasting in right now, across the hallway in the Center for Civic Engagement Theater. You can hear that debate right here on Wisconsin Public Radio at 7 o'clock. We're also talking about the presidential contest, the congressional races, and Christine, we will be back to hear from Sister Simone Campbell right after these words. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open right now, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
What do you think of the political races? What do you think of the race between Tommy Thompson and Tammy Baldwin? What do you think of the presidential race between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney? What do you think of the fact that Wisconsin right now, according to the Marquette University poll, is a dead heat? Both the Senate race and the presidential race, a statistical tie in Wisconsin, which the president absolutely needs if he's going to win re-election. How do you think he did in the debate on Tuesday? What do you expect on the debate that's coming up next week on foreign policy? 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Christine, once again, you as a Democrat are outnumbered here tonight by two Republicans, so I am going to even the playing field a little. As you know, Sister Simone Campbell, the outspoken Catholic nun who organized the Nuns on the Bus tour, was here on campus today. She launched that bus tour to protest the budget plan of Mitt Romney's running mate, Paul Ryan. Sister Simone calls his budget immoral because of its cuts in social programs and what she calls its redistribution of wealth to the richest Americans. Here's a short segment of an interview that I did just a few hours ago.
The Paul Ryan budget, he accurately points out that we need to be fiscally responsible, but his measure for fiscal responsibility I find horrifying and not in keeping with who we are as a nation. He's proposing that, and the House passed this budget, that cuts social services, that cuts food stamps for hungry families, that cuts all of the safety net programs, and yet at the very same time, rather than applying those savings like he's claiming towards the deficit, he is actually cutting the taxes of the wealthy.
Well, you're approaching this from a religious perspective. Would you go so far as to call the Paul Ryan budget immoral and even anti-Christian?
Well, I won't go so far as anti-Christian. I'll certainly go as far as not passing a basic moral test. That's what the Catholic bishops said in the letter that they sent to all of the members of Congress, both House and Senate, that the Ryan budget fails the basic moral test because it does not take care of those who are at the margins of our society. What people don't realize is folks working for minimum wage still live in poverty. People just think, they get the idea that folks are just lazy. People in poverty work hard. They have to scramble every day to keep food on their family table and a roof over their family's heads. The fact that wages haven't gone up, food stamps is just a way of making sure that low-wage workers can eat. We're all involved in this thing together. We cannot let our people go hungry.
That's Sister Simone Campbell, who kicked off the famous Nuns on the Bus tour in protest of the Paul Ryan budget. Question to our three panelists, is the Paul Ryan budget immoral, or is Sister Simone Campbell treading on thin ice by taking such a strong political stance as a religious leader?
Well, what we get here is the difference between campaigning and governing. The Paul Ryan budget was a governing document, and it's a starter place, and he's making the points on the debt and some of the unsustainable things that are part of our government today. He has no illusion that that would ever survive. But he did it as a part of the government. He knew he'd never get out of the Senate. But it's a starting point. And I give him credit for being courageous enough to do that and take the rap. And he's taking the rap now. He never thought he was going to be a vice presidential candidate when he did this, and would have to defend something that fundamentally is almost a tactical instrument.
I was very pleased to have somebody finally represent the underclass. I have heard middle class, middle class, middle class, middle class, nobody addressing the underclass and always trying to criticize the upper class. So in that case, she's right. But I think we're off track. I think that this election is going to be decided by the economy and who feels can do the best job for U.S. Senator and who thinks they can do the best job as president to help us get back to work in the United States of America.
Christine, I know already your opinion of Sister Simone Campbell. You helped bring her here, but the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. I was lucky enough to be at the Democratic Convention and went to her workshop, and of all the speeches that I heard, and I heard zillions, hers was probably one of the most touching to me as a woman who was raised by nuns and who I believe, you know, formed my spirit were the strong nuns that I learned at their knee. And so Sister Simone represents that to me. And so when she talks about the budget being a moral document, that really rings true to me. And I think that when you talk about, and I'm so happy to hear you say that, Bob, about how she is finally someone representing the underclass, because it's true. And when you talk about what this budget really means, and I really don't see it as a courageous document. I see it as a cowardly document, kowtowing to the interests of the wealthy who give huge amounts to super PACs and fund elections. You know, this budget is cutting Medicaid by 30%. You know, my mother was in a nursing home here in town called Marywood, a Catholic-supported nursing home. And if she hadn't had Medicaid and nursing home Medicaid, you know, I was 32 years old when she had a stroke and had to go in there. I would have had her in my home because she would not have been able to be there. There wouldn't have been any way to keep her there. So I think we have to talk about how this really affects families, and that's what Sister is talking about. A budget is an expression of the nation's priorities, and it is a moral document. And we do talk about social justice, and we do talk about economic equality and compassion for our people. And so for me and for the many, many people who were there today who gave her four standing ovations, by the way, and it was a bipartisan crowd, it was a wonderful message that resonated with so many of us, because the talk of the poor and how the poor in our country are being handled is missing from this. In our district, in our school district, Bob, we have in our Wausau school district, we have a number of schools where 75% of our children are on free and reduced lunch. Poverty is here. and no one wants to talk about it. We just talk about tax breaks for the wealthy. Let's talk about what we're going to do for the poor, and Sister brings that to us.
Well, I do want to talk about it, but I think we first have to solve the question of money. I don't know one Democrat or one Republican who is running for Congress or for presidency or for Senate who is saying, I want to raise taxes to help the poor. I can't find one program of people saying, we got to raise those taxes. I say we got to raise the income, and the upper class, the decision makers, the managers in our business, the people that run it, are the ones that are going to make that decision. If they don't come through, if our companies don't start exporting, producing more, and hiring more, we ain't going to take care of the underclass, because the politicians are not telling them that they're going to do it for them.
Sister had a very interesting point today, and she said, when you think about what food stamps really are, they are a subsidy for large corporations who refuse to pay decent wages to our workers, because the workers that are making $7, $8, $9 an hour cannot afford to eat. And so because they're allowed to pay those kinds of wages, we have to use food stamps.
What do you think, what do you folks think of CEOs and the presidents of companies telling their workers who they should vote for, and telling them that their jobs are at stake if they make the wrong choice?
Does anybody know of a president that did that?
Oh, they're
in Wisconsin. I want to know what corporate president, firm has come out and said that.
I haven't heard of one in Wisconsin. There's a big real estate mogul in Florida who has done it, and there are a few more that have come forward.
I think that's fringe performance. I don't think that's a national thing. When Bob was setting up candidates in the Stevens Point area, he would bring them into Century, both sides, and encourage everybody to come in and see it. And that's as far as the management went. They just said, come and listen and make up your own mind. And I think that's pretty characteristic of businesses that we know, I know, and that in Wisconsin.
Well, we see a lot of businesses in central Wisconsin where our governor would come and they'd have they'd have the governor speak in front of all the workers. Now, I can't tell you that all those workers supported him, but their boss would say, come on into the plant, and the workers are all there. So
I can tell you that the boss has supported him.
Yeah, the boss is supporting him.
But you had on the contrary, you had the situation at the University of Wisconsin where they shut down the university for the president. I thought that is perfectly respectable thing to do. This is the president of the United States. He got a lot of heat for that.
Yeah.
Because they're favoring Obama. The governors and incumbents and presidents, they get to stand when they want.
I think Romney could have come, but nobody come to see him if they went to Madison.
Maybe. That's right. That's why he's not coming to Madison.
But then again, you don't see Barack Obama going to the University of Oklahoma either.
Yeah, that's right.
How do you think this presidential race is going to turn out? Mitt Romney really gained a lot of credibility in that first debate. Was Mr. Obama able to reverse that with his very strong winning performance in the second debate?
I don't think Obama did as poorly in that first debate as the media tried to play it. I think the more important thing about the first two debates is that Romney stood on the same stage both times, and they looked like equal individuals. You took away the aura of the presidency, and you took the aura of the CEO. They became two individuals.
But don't you think, and I've heard this criticism from some people, that Mitt Romney was actually disrespectful to a sitting president by getting in his face, telling him that he'd have his chance to speak, saying things like, let me give you some advice, talking over him, repeating questions over and over? What would have happened if Romney was president and a Barack Obama as a candidate came up to Mitt Romney, President Romney, got in his face in a similar situation and said, excuse me, you'll have your chance to speak, Mr. President.
Just like Mr. Biden got in our congressman's face, which was the rudest behavior I've ever seen. I'm a high school debater from way back. But I've been thrown off the stage with that kind of behavior of rudeness. No, I think I don't look at it getting in the face. I think that you could expect that, and I said that Obama did a good job of not blowing his tube. I like the debate. I really did, as a debate. And I'm not going to criticize either one, as I said. I thought Obama did much better than the press pointed out in the first debate.
What about the confrontation over Libya? over the statements in the Rose Garden. You know, Mr. Obama came across very strong on television. And you know, we have this old Clint Eastwood cliche. Clint Eastwood, of course, appeared at the Republican convention. Go ahead, make my day. Do we have a new cliche for 2012? Please proceed, Governor.
Yeah. Well, I thought Romney, he should have realized something bad was about to happen to him. And the look in Obama's eyes when you look at that tape, it's like, okay, I got you now, buddy. It was great.
I don't like the debates for openers. I don't think it's a proper forum for people running for an office of that importance and getting the kind of questions they get and the kind of opportunity. It isn't a debate for openers. It's a sort of a joint press conference. The best debate we had was the one that Mike Coucher did with Barrett and Walker. And because they got into subjects and they got pretty deep into them, and if they were glibly passing a soundbite, Mike wouldn't let them go get by with that. He kept pressing them and pressing them. So the format offends me. One of the candidates that I ran for governor was Warren Knowles. So I ran two of his campaigns. We wouldn't let him debate. Number one, he would have been a terrible debater. He was a very nice man, very soft-spoken. He would not have been able to deal with that kind of a format.
Well, it's interesting that in the congressional race here in the 7th, we have one debate coming up Monday night, but as I understand it, Congressman Duffy refused to allow these debates to be televised, and so they're going to be streamed, but not live television. Huh. And so, you know, it's kind of what I think is interesting about the debates is
Christine, I organized that debate, and we have two television stations that are involved. If either one of them wants to televise it, they can.
But they're not going to, and they're going to be live streamed.
One of them might televise
it. But wait a minute. You know, we live in northern Wisconsin. There are so many people that do not get live stream up north. I can tell you, I have a home up there, and you just don't get it. But what I think is interesting about these presidential debates is 67 million people watched them. And so when we talk about these ads, people are looking for something real because they're sick of it. We get all our information from these television commercials. So you watch the debates and you think, am I going to get a real sense of the man?
Let's talk about the moderators. Candy Crowley on Tuesday, Martha Raddatz for the vice presidential contest, Jim Lehrer for the first presidential debate. Here's something we have in common for all three of them. The losing side always seems to complain about the moderator.
I like Candy Crowley best because I think Teddy Roosevelt said it for her. Speak softly, but carry a big stick. And she spoke softly, but she did step up and say, down, boys, down, boys.
When she told the governor to sit down, I almost fell off my chair. I was screaming.
I thought that was terrific.
I loved
because
it.
I'm in charge of this. It's a Lord Reagan line. This is my program. I paid for it.
That's right.
Yeah. Lehrer was not even in the room.
Yeah, it was horrible.
It was just befuddled.
And in the debate coming up, the Tammy Baldwin, Tommy Thompson contest, there will be questions and answers, and then on each topic, the candidates will have a 6-minute free-form discussion period with no interference from the moderators. And that will be very interesting.
You mean give and take
They got to talk to each other.
That's fun.
And that's tonight at 7 o'clock. You can hear it right here on this Wisconsin Public Radio station.
We'll be there if you let us go to another room.
We've got Democrat Christine Bremer Moogley and independent political analyst Bill Krause and veteran Republican strategist Bob Williams talking politics, talking about Tammy Baldwin and Tommy Thompson, about the presidential race. We're going to talk about the 7th District congressional race when we come back. We want to hear from you. We've had no phone calls today. Where are you folks? 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking politics before the big Tammy Baldwin, Tommy Thompson debate with Republican Bob Williams and Republican Independent, we'll call you Bill Krause, and Democrat Christine Bremer Moogley, 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. We do have an interesting development in congressional races across the country. Republican candidates are bringing out their mothers to serve as a, you could call them a buffer, I guess, against Democratic charges that the Paul Ryan budget, which they voted for, would turn Medicare into an optional voucher program for those under 55. Democrats say it would effectively end Medicare as we know it. Here's a story I did this week about an ad being run by 7th District Congressman Sean Duffy that features his mother, Carol. The ad features Sean Duffy's mother, Carol, who tells us she's a lifelong Democrat.
People might expect the mom to vote for her own son, but Sean really had to earn my vote. Don't believe the lies. Sean will do what's right for Medicare and seniors.
This isn't the first time a Republican has used his own mother to blunt attacks on the Medicare issue. Vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan brought out his mother, Betty, on the day he was named as Mitt Romney's running mate.
My mom has been on Medicare for over 10 years. She planned her retirement around this promise. That's a promise we have to keep.
Ryan created the plan that would turn Medicare into an optional voucher program for those under 55. UW Stevens Point political scientist Ed Miller says Ryan and Duffy are using their mothers because the plan isn't popular.
He voted for the voucher plan, and so I think that's where he sort of stuck. My mother, I would never harm her in Medicare. Well, he may not be harming her, that may be true, but people under 55 would be harmed.
Sean Duffy's Democratic opponent Pat Kreitlow agrees.
Everybody else knows the truth about Congressman Duffy's record on Medicare and the budget. If a politician has to trot out his mother to say that she'll vote for him, you know he's in trouble.
But Duffy says changes are needed to keep Medicare from going bankrupt, and he defends using his mother in the ad.
My mom is a senior. She relies on Medicare, and I'm not going to do anything to hurt Medicare for seniors today.
Duffy accuses the Democrats of taking $716 billion from Medicare for Obamacare. The Democrats say that money was a savings, not a cut. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. All right, Christine, you were laughing. Let's have out of here.
First of all, the fact that that Duffy keeps talking about the $716 billion cut from Medicare, which has been declared the most outrageous lie of the campaign, that alone, in my book, disqualifies him, and people shouldn't vote for him because he keeps repeating it. Everyone knows that it is not a lie, but let's talk about his mother.
Here's the argument that Mitt Romney made. You're cutting $716 billion in waste and overcharges. That's essentially what's happening. It did extend the life of Medicare by 8 years. He says if you take that money and you don't pay doctors and hospitals that, they're not going to take new Medicare patients.
Well, it doesn't come from doctors and hospitals. It comes from insurance companies that are overcharging on Medicare's back. So, and it comes from savings by having better efficiencies. So it's just an absolute falsehood. And if we don't do Obamacare, Medicare will go belly up by 2016. So we at least get it, like you said, 8 more years. But let's talk about this pandering with his mother. I mean, I think it's sad. And when you look at the playbook across the nation, they've told all these Republican congressmen that are in trouble, okay, guys, we know everyone's worried about Medicare going under. Nobody likes voucher care, so bring out your mom, who is already on Medicare and isn't going to be affected, like your political scientist said, and have her support you. And everybody says, isn't that cute? That's his mom. But sad. It's just sad. It's pandering to the electorate, and it just treats us like idiots.
And I want to remind you that Sean Duffy and his opponent Pat Kreitlow will be debating right here at UW Marathon County, across the hallway from where we are, at 7 p.m. on Monday, and it is free and open to the public.
I'll be there.
I suspect the issue will come up. Let's let our Republicans weigh in on this.
It seems to me that the discussion of Medicare, Medicaid, health care, and Obamacare, it's the wrong question. We're talking about the wrong subject. The subject should be, can this country be successful in a competition in a global economy when we pay twice as much for the health care of our people as our competitors do? So they immediately have 8 to 9% cost advantage, no matter putting wages aside. That if the Obamacare had been characterized as a cost-saving attempt to get us competitive.
For crying out loud, Bill, it was called the Affordable Care Act.
It was called that, but when you talk to ask somebody in the street and they think it's welfare for the 40 million, many deadbeats among them, and now we're talking about $700 billion. We're not talking about the fundamental economic problem. If this conversation well, putting the mothers aside, gets us to the real subject. It'll be a plus.
Yeah, I think, Bill, I completely agree with Bill. We're wasting our time, I think, talking about these incidents when the public is still saying, what is your plan, Mr. President, to help us better than you've helped us for the last 4 years? What is your plan, Mr. Romney, that will get us to a better end than we are today? Because for 4 years, Mr. Obama has been in charge, and we are worse off than we were 4 years ago.
Exactly. And so when we have, I agree with you both very, very definitely, but when we have Congressman Duffy coming forward and talking about $716 billion cut out of Medicare and bringing out his mother, and, you know, we aren't getting to the right decision. I'm a small business person. You know, I benefit from the Affordable Health Care Act by getting tax credits for every $500-$600 I pay for each one of my employees every month. I will benefit from that. So, you know, when people say small business doesn't benefit, I think you're right when you talk about the fact that this hasn't been played well. People don't really understand what it is.
Do you agree with Bob that we're worse off than we were 4 years ago?
No. 4 years ago, we were about to go down the toilet.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We've had no phone calls today, but we've had a wonderful conversation. So I think that probably all of you folks are just enjoying it. But if you would like to join us, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. And we're going to be talking about politics here for about another 15 minutes. And then at 7 o'clock, the big debate between Tommy Thompson and Tammy Baldwin. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back on the other end. Hearing from a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter who's traveling the length of Highway 51, Route 51, as we say on this show, hearing what real voters have to say.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and speaking of Route 51 or Highway 51, our Wisconsin Public Radio reporter, Maureen McCollum, is traveling the length of Highway 51 this week, getting the pulse of real people in communities all across Wisconsin. She started in Janesville. She ended up in Lac du Flambeau, and I caught up with her yesterday in Merrill and asked her what was on the minds of the voters that she talked to.
Job creation, especially we started in Janesville where, you know, jobs were on everyone's mind, because almost everyone in that town has been touched by the GM plant closing. The second thing we've heard mostly from people is that they are just completely sick of partisan bickering. They want Democrats and Republicans to get along. They don't understand why they just can't work together. You know, it's all about compromise. They talk about how they have to compromise within their family, within their work, and the politicians should be able to have to do that too.
You went to a bowling alley where Republicans were meeting to watch the debate.
Yeah, the Republicans went to Lincoln Lanes. The Lincoln County Republican Party met there for a watch party, and they were very excited afterwards. They thought that Mitt Romney had won the debate.
Did you talk to some Democrats? What did they tell you?
Lindsay Moon, who she's the other reporter with me, she talked with the Democrats on the phone because they didn't have an official watch party.
Did they think Barack Obama won?
Yeah, they thought Barack Obama did much stronger than in the previous debate.
So we have the Republicans thinking that Mitt Romney won and the Democrats thinking that Barack Obama won.
Right, exactly.
And where are you heading next?
Next, tonight we head to Lac du Flambeau, and we'll be meeting with a Get Out the Vote organizer who's trying to ramp up the Native American voting bloc. And then we'll just be meeting with other community members just to see what's on their minds.
Is there anything that really sticks out? Any story, anything you'd like to tell me?
I'd say this couple that we met in Westfield yesterday, the husband, he's a truck driver. He basically says that he votes however his wife tells him to, and he claims to not know anything about politics, but went on for about a half hour about immigration, the economy, and his wife was very passionate about Christian values and basically to cut back on spending. But then afterwards, you know, we went and talked with a group of seniors, and there were some women there who said that they'd be dead if it wasn't for Medicare. And when you hear that and you think about that, it's, you know, it touches you and you think about that.
So the seniors are concerned about Medicare. Who do they think is going to protect it?
The ones who had Medicare as their number one issue said that it was Obama They were voting for Obama. There were a handful of seniors there who, while Medicare wasn't the number one issue for them, you know, a lot of them were conservative, religious, pro-life, against gay marriage. Therefore, they were voting for Romney.
Any idea, just based on your talking to people, how this state is going to trend? It's colored in light blue on most of the maps, meaning it's leaning toward President Obama, but certainly not a wrap for him.
You know, most of the people we've talked with say that they will be voting for Obama. But interestingly enough, we see more Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan signs in yards. When I talked with, I mentioned this to the Republicans in Lincoln County last night, and they had said, they claimed that they were the silent majority. So we'll see.
We will see. That's reporter Maureen McCollum traveling the length of Highway 51 for Wisconsin Public Radio this week. Any thoughts on her observations?
The gentleman that said his wife tells him how to vote has a strong marriage. It's not going to end. I want to go back to the first one, the woman who said job creation is it. And I'll bring it to tonight. I think Tommy Thompson is best for this state at this time as a senator, the Club of 100, as they call it, because I worked for Mel Laird, and I worked for his foundation with him when he was Secretary of Defense. And when you come out of 4 years as Secretary of Health and Human Services, you are strong in the corridors of power in Washington. And Tommy can take our leaders of our industry. He can take people from our state through that capital, and people will, they don't call him governor. It will be Mr. Secretary. Because in Washington, that's a club, and they respect him, and he's an entry point for our economy in Washington that we have never had in a senator as long as I can remember.
Christine?
Well, I think that is exactly why people don't want Tommy Thompson, because of his power and that he has used his power to enrich himself. And I think people do not believe that he's ours any longer. That I believe that her slogan on television is true. And I think that people believe that Tammy will fight for them and Tommy will fight for himself. And so I really believe that, yeah, there's no question he's got power, but look how he's used it. And now he's using it to try to become senator again, and it makes you wonder, what does he want at this age in his life and stage in his life? What's he really after? And I really think that Tammy is the one that represents our people. You know, I just would like to make a comment. I'm a lawyer, and I sit and talk to people. I'm a country lawyer, and I have offices in this area, and I sit and talk to people all the time about this campaign. They all know I'm a Democrat. They come to me anyway. But, you know, we talk about health care. I mean, people talk about health care. They really, really need it here. And so, you know, when people get in accidents or they get hurt or they have problems in their families and they have no health care, I mean, it's devastating. And so I think health care is a very important issue, and I think that's many, many people tell me they're voting for Obama and they pray he wins, because if they don't know what they're going to do.
Bill Krause, we'll have you weigh in here.
I'd like to change the subject. We started with Duffy and Kretlow, and I'm the alien in the room, so I don't know how this race is developing, but it seemed to me that there shouldn't be any question about it, that the redistricting has rigged this district for Duffy. Is that not true? And they've certainly rigged it for Kind. It's a deal. The deal made. It was like the deal made 10 years ago for Ryan and Baldwin when they made the second district and the first district safe districts. So as far as I know, there are no competitive congressional districts in this state. And does anybody up here care? That you don't really have a vote anymore?
Well, it wasn't a deal. Is the problem that redistricting wasn't a deal because there was no compromise. The Republicans just did it.
Oh, yeah, they did it for Duffy.
They lopped off Stevens Point.
They lopped off.
But then Ron Kind was a beneficiary because
his district.
Yeah,
I'm in Kind's district. All the deals
after all those years in the seventh. Yeah. I'm in the third.
Yeah, somewhere. We're all heartbroken. We lost Stevens Point.
Yeah,
sure. How does Bob Williams feel? He's voting with people in La Crosse now.
I feel left out. That's how I feel. I'm a fish hook that came around the county and came up and grabbed my county so the Democrats could solid for Kind. And now I agree with Bill. I think it's a shoo-in in the 7th District for the Republicans because that was the deal that was made.
Well, don't count Pat Kretlow out. He's a fighter, and he's a strong, powerful man, and he's very, very smart. And when he speaks, people listen. And so I think Pat Kreitlow is really a strong candidate.
Well, what's the answer to redistricting? Should we have an independent panel draw these maps?
Absolutely.
And if you're a Democrat and you're complaining about the way things are with redistricting, yeah, why didn't the Democrats put that into effect when they had the governor's mansion and both houses of the legislature?
That's a good question, Glenn. Horribly missed opportunity.
Because Governor Doyle is a nice guy, and he wanted to remain a nice guy and not fight kicking and screaming, because that would have just erupted all over the state. So
the answer is in process in Madison. Kim Cullen and Dale Schultz are putting forth a constitutional amendment for the next population count. So most of the guys who are there now or girls who are there now aren't going to be there. So their oxen are not being gored. And the Iowa system works, and it works perfectly. They get a better turnout. They get more competition. Everything about it is good, except it is tough on incumbents. So no incumbent is going to vote on something that affects him. But if you move it out far enough, and if people are unhappy as Bob and as Christine, as she's nodding her head is, maybe it can happen. But it ain't going to happen without a big public push.
Yeah, I agree.
It kind of reminds me of the argument over the Electoral College. We'll never get rid of that because the small states don't want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the Electoral College since we've just got a few more minutes. There are something like 4 or 5 plausible scenarios in which this race could come down to a 269-269 tie. Yeah. Very plausible scenarios, in which case it gets thrown into the House of Representatives, mm-hmm, and each state gets one vote in the House. It's not proportionate. What if that happens?
Republicans have more states but less people. The big
That's right.
The Californians, the New Yorks, they are Democrat, but the states west of us, it's just all Republican till you get to California.
The other thing in play, Glenn, across the country, and it is in play, is a constitutional change, not a statutory change. You agree in your state that you will vote for whoever gets the popular vote. Wins the popular vote, not who wins your state. And electors can vote for anybody they want to. So you can mandate that. And that's gone. Well, as soon as you get to 270, then the popular vote will win. Now, the downside is you'll never see a candidate in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Let's go to the phones. We have Calvin and Juno who wants to weigh in. Calvin, you're on Route 51.
Yeah, hey, good evening, guys. Yeah, I just want to weigh in, first off, on our local election in Wisconsin. And I'm a 24-year-old, I would say, blue-collar, semi-college-educated person. And after hearing both arguments from both Tommy and Tammy, I heard the libertarian candidate on the...
Calvin, I think we just lost you.
Come back, Calvin.
Calvin, we just lost you. But all right, we're going to there are candidates who are not debating tonight.
That's
the
right.
Libertarian candidates, and I think there's another independent.
The Green candidates.
So what do you think of that? Is this two-party system something that's being maintained, as I think Calvin would have argued, by the way we do these debates?
Absolutely.
Sure.
There's no question about it that the two-party system is being maintained. You know, I think that it's unfortunate that they're not on the podium. On the other hand, if they don't have the showing behind them and they don't get the grassroots support, there's arguments that they shouldn't be up there. So it goes both ways.
And I don't want us to turn to Italy.
Right.
Christine, who do you think is going to win the presidential race?
Barack Obama.
And how significant is the women's vote going to be?
It's going to be huge. I think that every misstep Romney makes more women turn away from him. This last comment in the debate about binders of women, I mean, when he says that he has so few people that he doesn't know enough women to bring on his cabinet, women are going to go wholeheartedly for Barack.
Bill Krause, who's going to win?
I think Obama's going to win.
And Bob Williams?
Tommy's going to win the Senate, and it's going to be a dead tie in the House of Representatives.
Oh, please.
We want to thank today's guests, Democrat Christine Bremer-Moogley of Wausau, Republican Bob Williams of Stevens Point, and political analyst Bill Krause of Madison. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. And a reminder, you can listen in on this Wisconsin Public Radio station in just an hour at 7 tonight to the second U.S. Senate debate between Congresswoman and Democrat Tammy Baldwin and former Governor and Republican Tommy Thompson. Reminder, this coming Monday night at 7 p.m. here at the UW-Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater, the first debate for the 7th Congressional District between incumbent Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Pat Kreitlow. Again, you can hear that right here on Wisconsin Public Radio, repeated next week, next Thursday at 5 on Route 51. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we are heading out of town.